AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. The grain markets took a winding route to end up with just minor daily changes. There wasn't much change on the fundamentals from last week, and traders seemed content to just position for tomorrow's supply and demand report.
Live from the sun-splashed Midwest via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. Later, Kerry Artek from Artek Advisory. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, content. That's a good word to use today because I'm pretty content with this weather out there too, man.
Oh, it's outstanding, dude. Really, yeah. Really good.
Yeah, it is. It is. It feels a lot like spring. I'm telling you, when I look outside, I still see way too much snow. But I did a little driving around Eastern Iowa over the weekend, and there's a lot of bare ground out there, too. So it's feeling like it. It's feeling like spring. There's even robins around already, man.
I haven't seen any yet, although I haven't looked real close. And actually, this afternoon, as soon as we get done here, I'm going to go out and check the rhubarb. That's one of my early harbingers of summertime. Once that rhubarb emerges, you know, I write it up every year. The date that the rhubarb finally emerges. Yeah. I call it Rhubarb Springs Eternal. It's something I started doing, and I don't think you probably noticed. Otherwise, you would have been like, Michelson!
No. Love that. Love that a lot, man. It's all good. It's all good.
It's usually around the 12th is about my average date. March 12 is usually when it pops out.
I'm surprised it's that early.
Yeah.
But, okay, yeah. Yeah, very cool.
I'm going to go look today. We'll see. Yeah.
All right. Just slight changes to the upside, though, for corn and soybean prices today. Yeah. Soybean meal under a little bit of pressure. Soybean oil, higher. Surprise, surprise. Wheat was mostly lower today. We had a little bit of strength in live cattle, mixed trade in feeders, and some higher prices in lean hogs. But non-committal is how I would describe the markets today. Didn't really want to fire off and push hard in one direction or the other. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, export inspections of wheat in the week ended March 4 were reported at just over 482,000 metric tons. That was in line with trade expectations. USDA also added another 67,000 metric tons to the previous week's inspection tally. Traders said the chance for rain over the Central Plains the next 10 days is limiting buying interest in wheat futures. July hard red futures opened solidly higher and pushed through resistance at Friday's high before prices reversed to trade through support at Friday's low. Strengthened soybeans helped to pull wheat back up to a mid-range close. July HRW wheat 4¼ cents lower, 627.5. July soft red slipped 2¾ cents, 640.5. September spring wheat 1¾ cents lower, 653.5. Chip.
Yeah, technically it looked like it was a kind of a crazy day in that wheat market because, like you said, we busted resistance at Friday's high in that July SRW contract. We broke support at Friday's low in that contract, came back up for a mid-range close. A whole lot of work to not make a lot of progress one direction or the other.
Corn export inspections in the week ended March 4 of 1.54 million metric tons were in line with pre-report trade expectations and were down from the previous week's inspections. Those were revised up nearly 410,000 metric tons from the initial report. Jeez. Strength in the soybean market gets much of the credit for pulling corn prices up to a slightly higher close, but some traders pointed to signs that gasoline demand is recovering as a source of support for corn prices. Early session price pressure suggests traders also spent time positioning for tomorrow's supply and demand report. May corn futures a penny and a half higher, 547. July corn up 2 cents, 536. December corn closed at 481 and one half. Dead steady on the day, Chip.
Yeah, over 2 million tons is the inspection tally for the final week of February after a revision of 410,000 metric tons. That's like six boats, Davis.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do we miss six boats getting loaded? It doesn't make any sense to me.
They need to do that thing where they tap the radar thing with their finger. You know, it's got a boop, boop. Just tap it with your finger a little bit.
I got it.
Maybe might help. Heavy rains on harvest-ready beans in Mato Grosso and a hot, dry end to the growing season in Argentina helped old crop beans gap higher on the open and trade to a new contract high before profit-taking kicked in. That sent the market to a low-range close. Export inspections in the weekend at March 4 totaled nearly 588,000 metric tons. That was in line with trade expectations. USDA also revised the previous week's inspections up more than 124,000 metric tons. May soybean futures 3¾ cents higher, 14.33¾. July beans firmed 4½ cents, 14.18¼. November bean futures closed at 12.54¼. That's up 7 cents on the day.
So they missed a boat of wheat. They mixed six boats of corn, and they missed two boats of soybeans in that last week of February. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why that's happening.
May cotton futures gapped higher, fell back to fill the gap, and recovered to close just above the opening range. May cotton 56 points higher, 88.32. December cotton jumped 80 points to 85.34. Help me on my technical analysis here. You fall into the gap, and then you recover to close above the opening range. That feels like a pretty positive signal for the cotton market.
Yeah. It wasn't a bad performance in cotton at all. When you take a look at that December contract, like you said, we gapped higher, we fell back, but came right back and closed above the opening range even. So that's a momentum trade to the upside.
Okay, very good. Just real quickly, April live cattle, 32.5 cents higher, 119.35. June up 115, 119.15. March feeders up 75 cents, 135.35. April lean hogs, 12.5 cents higher, 87.30. June hogs up 55, 95.97½, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing this week, Jack?
Hey, I'm having a great time. What about you?
Absolutely. Boy, there was a lot of trade in those markets today. Not a lot of progress in one direction or the other. What do you make of it?
Well, I guess it's okay. I guess, you know, the fact that the beans and corn did close a little higher is a positive sign. I would have hoped for a little bit more, but we did at least close higher, and we are going into the WASDE reports tomorrow, and they're gonna probably be looking for lower South American production of both beans and corn and lower ending stocks here. So we should get a bullish report tomorrow. So I guess I'm kind of optimistic about the way things are going to run here.
All right, very good. You feel good about the momentum in this in the grain markets yet? Have we lost too much to the upside that we can't get it back, or do you feel like we can still keep this thing chugging along to the upside?
Well, I'll tell you, I think when you look at it, the last few weeks have been mostly a sideways trade.
Yep.
We haven't really gone down at all, and that, to me, is the best sign that we've had that we're not done with the rally just yet. I think today we started trying to break out to the upside in the beans. Corn's got a little bit more work to do in that regard, but still the positive price action helps. So I guess, you know, I think that there's still some upside coming.
Okay, yeah, very good. Yeah, you know, you look at that new crop contract in particular. Good grief, it's bottom left, top right for the new crop bean contract and a new contract high today. So, and a gap higher in the new crop beans.
Oh, the new crop is a completely different subject.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Jack. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions, next. You know weeds can impact potential corn yields, but how do you measure it? I'm joined today by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, tell us a little bit about the relationship between weeds and yields.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip. Essentially, immediately after you plant, your corn's yield potential is at its absolute highest. And then you start to get these environmental stressors immediately after you plant that reduce that yield potential. So higher yield potential really starts with early season weed control, because once the weed emerges, it steals vital nutrients and water, among other things that are needed for corn growth and grain fill.
Okay, so these weeds that emerge with the corn plant, how does it impact the health of the plant?
Well, early season weeds fundamentally alter corn growth, health, and eventually its potential yield. So weeds present at corn emergence are an immediate source of stress and cause corn to enact a series of defensive measures. These will include things like corn stalks growing taller and leaves growing wider, and that's to better compete for sunlight. The corn leaves grow parallel to the row versus out into the row to avoid competing directly for sunlight. All of these things are really irreversible, and they're going to have a negative impact on the yield overall.
Okay, so for corn growers that are looking to control those tough weeds, maximize yield potential, what herbicide do you recommend?
Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when applied pre-emergent and at a full labeled use rate, replicated Syngenta and University trials show Acuron out-yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre.
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try the online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
So, Davis, remember the issues Chip. That I was having with my bird feeder and the turkeys here not that long ago?
I am well aware of your issues, yes, Chip.
Right, right. So I thought, well, I'll fix them. I'll move it. I'll move that bird feeder. And I'll put it someplace where the turkeys, you know, they wouldn't bother it. So I hung it underneath the deck where I can turn around, look out the window of the bunker, and see my bird feeder.
Okay, love
so
it.
So you know what I just saw?
Oh no!
Yeah,
what do you got going?
Yeah, yeah. A turkey flying up at my bird feeder, trying to knock it sideways to knock the seed out on the ground.
Turkeys in flight, man. What are you putting in that bird feeder? It's you got turkey treat going by accident. You got the wrong bag.
Well, you know, I put a little bit of calf perk in there.
Oh, and that'll do it.
And that'll do it. That brought them turkeys up. Yep.
Calf perk's been fueling me all day today, my brother. That's my Monday formula.
All right, man. Hey, let's bring in Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. How you doing today, Brian?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's good to talk with you. And how are you guys doing today?
All right. So it's been about, 6 weeks since you were on, Brian. What do you make of the markets, how they've traded since then? You know, with Jack, we were talking about that sideways trade up at the top in the old crop contracts and new crop markets, different animals, especially that new crop bean market. But old crop markets have they gone stale at these prices that we're at, or you feel like there's still some momentum?
Yeah, you know, since I've last been on, I think the markets have kind of diverted in a little bit different directions. The old crop corn, for example, made a high back in middle or early part of February and has never come close to really challenging that high. We've gone really much in a sideways type pattern. Whereas new crop corn has marched to contract highs and just continued to march higher. Seemingly, these old crop contracts have apparently priced in a lot of this demand already, and they're trying to price in slowing export business with South America supplies coming available, while the new crop contracts are pricing in still an acreage battle. And we've talked about that many times before, is this acreage battle is not going to be won until we get into really early April when the planters start rolling. And even then, things can change based off of weather conditions and prices, and we may not end up with the amount of acres that we intended to. So there's that battle may not change for quite some time, but certainly our export sales have slowed with South America's supplies becoming available, but they are still, you know, fast enough now that the USDA is likely going to have to make some adjustments at some point down the road for both corn and soybean balance sheets.
Okay, we'll talk about that more in a little bit when we get to the supply and demand reports, but I like how you said that, Brian. At some point, it doesn't necessarily have to come tomorrow, right?
It may not come tomorrow. Yeah, you know, yeah. They've been very slow, very conservative, and probably will continue to be that in that respect. So, yeah, they could easily justify themselves by increasing U.S. corn exports by 200 million tomorrow. Yeah. I really don't think they're going to do that. Most likely they're going to do, you know, another 50 million bushel increase and, or maybe 75, then limit some of that bullishness with maybe a slowdown in ethanol usage. I could certainly see that happening, 25 or 50 million bushels as well. And that may limit the overall bullish effect of the report tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe wait for a big move on the export number for the May supply and demand report when we've got the new and shiny 2021-22 first official looks at the balance sheet numbers for corn beans to kind of distract away from the old crop activity.
Yeah, exactly. They really don't want to print any soybean, any stocks below 100 million bushels. So, I think they probably could justify increasing the crush in tomorrow's report, but I don't know that they're going to increase the exports enough to really take it down very far. And I think the trade guess is kind of looking at the same thing, only 3 million bushel difference in last month's and just kind of a benign report.
Yep. Okay. What is the deal with these export inspections, Brian? I'm looking into it. I'm not getting a good explanation. I wonder if you've heard a good explanation on why we're getting such big revisions to the previous weeks on these export inspections reports. Have you heard anything?
I have not. You know, and that's a great question.
Crazy?
You know, they should be. It's crazy that they don't have this a better handle on it. But it does seem like every week our inspections are adjusted slightly from one week to the next. You know, the numbers that we're seeing are good. And very strong, but it's just confusing and frustrating that they're not giving us the full numbers and they have to make revisions each and every week.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, 2 million last week, the last week of February would have been over 2 million ton of corn loaded instead of the 1.6, whatever it was. That's a difference. That's a difference maker. That needs to be reported more accurately. If anybody's got any insight onto what's going on with that, give me a holler. I'd sure like to know, because it does matter. And doggone it, Brian, this is the time of the year when it probably matters the most with what's going on down in South America. It feels, Brian, like our export window is being pried open a little bit wider by those harvest delays in Brazil.
Yeah, you're right. You know, there's not that much, news for the trade to watch other than exports and what's happening in South American weather. So this is the time of year we really focus on exports and our inspections and how much product we're actually shipping across the seas. We don't have a lot of weather to talk about in the U.S. We're just starting to get planting in place in Texas. A lot of producers are going planting their corn, but until Midwest starts planting, we start talking about Midwest weather or harvest delays, that sort of thing. These export numbers are probably one of the key stats that we have to look at each and every week.
Yeah. Speaking of field work and spring activity, at Nystrom Keith sent me a tweet or tagged me in a tweet here just a few minutes ago. He's doing some field work up in South Dakota. Up in central South Dakota, and he's out leveling up flood rows, is what he calls them. But the dust is flying, man. And I've seen some talk up there that they, you know, once the ground gets fit for seeding spring wheat, they're going to go ahead and roll. They really don't care what the calendar tells them. And we could see some activity up there by the end of the week.
Yeah, we're starting to see seemingly every year earlier and earlier guys getting out in the fields and doing some field preparation or field work or finding something to do, especially if they were busy in the fall and couldn't get something accomplished. They're really going to try and get it done in the spring time frame.
Right. Very good. You know, let's stay on South America here for just a little bit longer, Brian. How concerned are you about the really soggy conditions in parts of Mato Grosso?
You know, we saw pictures today of some soybeans that were on the pod, and they were starting to sprout on the pod. So I think it's starting to become more and more of a concern about the wet conditions in Brazil. You know, everyone kind of assumed that, you know, it rains, but it'll shut off, and they'll try and be able to combine like normal. And I don't think that's really going to be the case. We're hearing more and more talk about some land being abandoned because it's too wet, and that means they probably won't be able to plant corn on it. Either after combining the soybeans, it's just too wet at this point in time. So you have a big range of extremes. Argentina down south is so dry that their crop is being hurt because of lack of moisture. Yep. In Brazil, it's just too wet. Some crop is being abandoned because it's sprouting in the pods, and that some of that crop's going to be abandoned. So not only are exports tomorrow going to be closely watched in U.S. ending right. stocks, but South American production, I don't know if the USDA makes a big change to that either, because these conditions are as of March 1. But going forward, I think that's something you really have to watch closely, is South American production being lowered and by how much.
Yeah. Yeah, the March update is a tough one for USDA. There's no question about it, because, like you said, it's as of March 1. This feels like something, what's going on in Brazil, what's going on in Argentina, it feels like something that's going to matter when we get the April S&D, though, Brian. It could be a big enough movement on both corn and soybeans that it could have an impact on our prices. Is that thinking too far in advance?
Yeah, it absolutely could. And, you know, if you're a farmer out there sitting on some old crop inventory, you know, you're waiting for news like this, some bullish news that would limit the production or limit the supply coming out of South America, that'll drive China or other buyers back to the United States for some export business. You know, it's been very limited as far as our private sales go over the last 3 or 4 weeks. And that this type of news is what usually gives us these export markets, is we get a big sale coming because it's too wet, too dry, and these other countries can't fulfill their commitments, so gotcha. Another country comes to us.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to talk more about that old crop inventory and how to market that. And let's talk some about the U.S. weather. It's dry out in the Western Corn Belt. We've got Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. It's time for headline news, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, truck rates hit 2.5-year highs along key Brazilian shipping route. There is a slight dip in the Chinese bean imports in January and February, but meat imports are up sharply. In the week ahead, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has 3 of Biden's nominees lined up for votes. That includes Michael Regan, EPA Administrator Merrick Garland for Attorney General, and Marsha Fudd to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. The COVID stimulus package contains $22.7 billion in agriculture and nutrition assistance provisions. Check out this morning's AgriTalk for some details on that. Fed officials continue to play down higher yields and a need for a policy response, and China is cracking down on the use of ASF vaccines. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
All my reasons. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip, got Davis with me.
Hello.
And we are having a conversation with Brian Hoops from Midwest Market Solutions. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 4¼ cents lower today, 627.5. July soft red down 2¾, 640.5. May corn futures 1½ higher at 547. December corn closed at 481.5, steady today. May soybean futures were 3¾ cents higher, 1433¾. November bean futures closed at 1254¼. That's up 7 cents on the day. May cotton, 56 points higher, 88.32. April live cattle, 32.5 cents higher at 119.35. March feeder cattle futures up 75 cents on the day to close at 135.35. And finally, April lean hogs, 12.5 cents higher, 87.30. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. Brian, those April hogs today, what, 12.5 cents higher? That's been a sideways market the last 3 days, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. You were talking about cotton earlier, now the hog market. That's one that looks like it might have topped out in really late February. We put a lot of premium into that April hog contract, trading above 90 cents. And now we started to back off and had a little correction pullback below 86 and have come back above it. But since that time, it's gone really sideways. I think it's going to have a hard time challenging $90 once again. Seems like for an April contract, that seems like a rich premium.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. You can't do a whole lot on the risk management side in that April contract anymore, though, can you, Brian?
You still have, almost 40 days of time on that. Okay. And the options expire the same day as the futures. So there is time if you need to do some risk management to, you can buy puts and sell calls, kind of build a fence in there. There's still time to do something if you have hogs to market in that window. But, these summer contracts, they're looking pretty attractive as well. They're in the upper 90s, 95, 96 in June, July, and August. I think there's going to be some opportunities to lock in maybe near close to $100, at least as a break level price that that's your worst case scenario.
Right, right. The scary thing here is that ASF in China is worse than what they've been letting on, and they get even more aggressive on pork imports than what they have been, right?
That's kind of the wild card. That's why I think it's a little risky to do a lot of straight futures hedges, using puts or using a window where you buy puts and sell calls or buy puts, sell another put. Makes a lot of sense because it gives you a little bit of a window of upside potential because our exports have been just outstanding. And it's what you mentioned is they have some problems in China trying to rebuild this hog herd. It's not going as planned, and that is opening the door for additional U.S. exports.
Right, right. As long as we're talking livestock, let's talk a little bit of what's going on in live cattle. That cash market, I don't know if I've seen a market tethered to a price like it's been tethered to 114. This is pretty incredible stuff, just hanging right there.
I think it's 5 weeks in a row we've traded at 114 in the Southern Plains, and then we may make it 6 weeks in a row this week.
Yeah.
It's unlikely we're going to really fall or gravitate very far from 114. It seems like that's a price that the feedlots are willing to take. Packers are certainly willing to pay that right now. But you look into the future, and those cattle contracts expecting the cash is going to firm up. We're probably going to have fairly big supplies through the month of March and going into early April, but then would expect supplies to tighten a great deal. And then you look at April and June, August, all trading above 118, anticipating that cash is eventually going to come up, and even into the fall months, they're trading 124 for December. Expecting cash is going to be really strong into the second, third, and fourth quarters of this year.
Yeah. That April contract is well off the highs that we posted last month. And you mentioned those summer month contracts. Let's jump out to the June. What are we as far as off the highs there? Had a high of like 120, 122 and a quarter, something like that. So about $4 off of that. There's still time to get some risk management in place if you want it, isn't there?
Yeah, there certainly is. And, I think on these cattle, you definitely want to allow for some upside potential there.
Okay.
Yeah, especially like in the June where we're opening the economy back up, and that seems to be going pretty well, that, some of the demand is going to start to return to restaurants and consumers eating out again. That, I think, will be a very positive force for the cattle market. Exports are also seemingly improving. So definitely allow yourself some potential, whatever strategy you want to employ, that you have some upside potential. But you look at October today, it's virtually touching its contract high. It came within a few ticks of it anyway, but up near some resistance. These markets are really anticipating a big rebound into that third quarter, and they're putting in a lot of bullishness already, and I can't say that it's all been dialed in either.
Yeah, yeah. Reopening of the food service and the restaurants out there, Brian, that's a great point, because it's going to help beef out, but it's going to help hogs out too. We're going to get back to using bacon as a condiment in many ways, and we've done that at home some, but not nearly as like the restaurants do.
That's right. Absolutely right. You'll start to see, restaurants featuring bacon or featuring pork. A lot of these places are featuring different steak cuts. Yeah, even the schools opening up full time is a boon to the food products or for more consumption of beef and pork products.
Right, right. Yep, good point. Good point. Okay, let's see. Oh, I know what it was. At the end of the last segment, I said, let's talk about U.S. weather. We probably better do that, as long as I said we were going to do it. Is it too early? Too early to be concerned about the dry conditions that we've got in the Western Corn Belt?
I don't think it's real too early, no, because we're talking about planting acres of how many acres are going to go in the ground, and we need max acres of corn and soybeans and spring wheat and cotton. So you got to be focusing on these acres. My clients in Texas are 2 weeks behind their corn plantings, and they're telling me if they can't get the corn planted by April the 1st, they're going to switch to cotton because it just gets too hot where they're at in Texas to grow corn late in the season. It just will not, the corn will not withstand it. Right. The hybrids can't stand that heat. So they have to plant early and get the crop through maturity before it gets really hot. So there's already, we're talking about weather conditions and they've got to get the going here, and they are planting now, but if it's any other delays come up, we see too much rain in Texas, no doubt loss of corn acres going to move to cotton. And that could happen throughout the spring all the way into the Midwest. It's dry in a lot of areas. And there's already farmers talking about, what if it doesn't rain? We get the crop planted, we've got to have this, monster crop. At the Ag Forum, USDA said the record largest soybean crop, and I think the third largest corn crop in history, or maybe it's the other way around, maybe largest corn, second largest soybean crop. You've got to have near perfect growing conditions to achieve that.
Yeah, you certainly do. And I've heard guys here in the middle of the country talking about the easy button, in other words, the lower cost crop going to soybeans, fewer loads to haul in the fall, and when you look at the revenue potential that you've got off that bean crop right now, maybe they're going to slip a few more acres over to soybeans. But in that area that you were just talking about, when they talk about hitting the easy button, a lot of times they're talking about sorghum, and it seems to me like there's a lot of interest in planting sorghum out that way, Brian.
There's a lot of demand for sorghum and for Milo, and that's a market, we really don't talk a lot about because there isn't a true futures market to hedge against, but there is a strong cash market, and those markets have doubled since last year, and so there's an incentive for producers to plant some of these smaller grains and take this higher cash price. So, you talked about grain sorghum, that's a real popular one, and it's one that may attract some acres away from corn or soybeans. And then also we talk about the winter plains being very dry. What happens to the winter wheat crop when it comes out of dormancy? There's already a chance it's been hurt because of very cold temperatures a couple weeks ago. If it comes out of dormancy and isn't looking very good or doesn't get good moisture, good chance that crop gets abandoned, torn up, and planted to corn or soybeans.
Yeah, yeah. Some kind of a feed grain, no question about
it. Right.
Okay, any urgency to do anything on the risk management side for corn, soybeans, wheat?
Well, I do think once you see contract ties being made in the springtime, there's something inside of me that says you've got to be rewarding rallies. And we saw contract ties in new crop soybeans and new crop corn overnight and during the day. And as we start to get planters out of the field, there's something else that tells me you've got to be anticipating that this market is trying to buy those acres away, and that's a huge incentive. And so that can take that incentive away after we've planted the acres or after you're committed to planting. So I think as we go here the next several weeks, new contract highs, start taking some of that risk off the table, make some sales. You can do it in, 5%, 10% increments, but slowly start selling into this rally and rewarding yourself. You certainly would rather sell, 1250 November futures than 1050 that you could have back in December. So you don't want to let that slip away.
Yeah. Yeah, and the 1250 that you've got available feels just as good as the 480 that we've got available in the DEIS 21 corn future. So be looking at all of your options. Yeah, good stuff, Brian. It's always fun to talk with you, buddy.
Good talking with you guys, too.
All right, that's Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. Yeah, don't ignore the opportunities, especially when we're making new contract highs. That's solid advice from Brian Hoops right there. Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, up next right here on AgriTalk.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Really good conversation there with Brian.
Solid insights.
Well, yeah, and the final comment that he made there about those markets that are making new contract highs, you probably shouldn't ignore those. I was like, that's great.
That's the second time you've mentioned that, actually.
Must be
rather key.
I love
Something struck a chord with you there.
Exactly. Why not reward the rallies? And I just keep thinking about how many people last fall were all over the 420 and old crop.
Yeah.
Just get me back to 420 and boom. All right. Flew through it. And you've got that kind of opportunity in the new crop too. So we should not be ignoring it. Okay, Kerry Artak is with us, Artak Advisory. How you doing, Kerry?
I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be back.
Good, good, good. We're going to start things off here with May corn in just a moment. But first, just a reminder to everybody that you can get a video, see a video at artakadvisory.com, artacadvisory.com, where Kerry gets into a little bit more detail than what we're going to be talking about right now. But let's get into May corn. What do you got?
Yeah, well, just a reminder, I'll do big picture and work my way in. Last December, we had what I'd call an ultra long-term buy signal by closing above 465 and a quarter. It's a long-term horizontal channel top that goes back 5 or 6 years. In the process, setting up what I consider to still be kind of a 640s, 647 and three quarter right now, long-term target. For me, that's like a 2021 objective. Whether we test that in late autumn or earlier is really sort of the question. Nearer term, let's say between now and through April, I've got 502 half as a floor of support that can contain selling through spring, and 579 even, that is kind of a ceiling. We actually tested in early February when March was front and center. If we test 579 even, we could top out there through April. Again, we could actually trade inside that 502 half floor to 579 even ceiling, into spring, well into spring. But given the fact I'm ultimately expecting a violation of 579 even, don't be surprised if that happens on the next test, which could be in the next few weeks. In other words, closing above 579 even, I would expect that 647 and three quarter target within as little as 2 to 3 months, which would put us in the late spring, early summer, where, the broader corn market can actually place an annual high.
Right.
On to May soybeans. Broader soybean market had a very similar long-term buy signal. It was elicited in November, which is still in place above around 1136, well below the market. We closed today 1433 and three quarter. Anticipating, the reason I'm mentioning is because it also has an ultra long-term objective way above the market at 1658 half that I'm expecting by some point this year. Like I said, with corn, whether it's late autumn or before, who knows? If I were to look, though, more near to midterm, I've got 1316 even, also well below the market, but much closer than that, 1136. 1316 even can contain selling through spring, and above which this market actually remains constructive over that time horizon. In fact, while 1494 above the market can contain buying through next week, If we close Friday above 1494, we're off to the races once again. That 1658 half, big picture objective, then probably realize within a month or two where May soybeans, the broader soybean market actually, can place an annual high. May cotton, I'm updating us here. This is like third week in a row, I think I've talked cotton, but we've been testing this long-term ceiling and we actually backed off nicely last week. So this may be the last cotton analysis I do for weeks to come. But in any event, 92.20 to 93.88 is our ceiling through the year. We've tested it. It was a target since September. And now that we've tested it, this market can, and I think should, over the next month or two, fall back to 81.21. And over the next 6 months or so, fall back as far south as 67 even. And so that's all in place right now. On the other hand, if we were to close Friday, the week itself, above 93.88, then we pivot aggressively northward into later year, the 135 to 155 region, then a realistic 12 to 18 month target. And I do want to mention the U.S. dollar, Chip, before I head out here. I posted a video, it's on the website, in January, early January, we essentially tested long-term support at the time that I was saying could contain selling through this year. And that's been holding. And not only that, last week we got a midterm buy signal to boot. So holding above 91.75 March U.S. dollar index, and we're trading in the 92 handle right now. I'm anticipating 96.75 over the next 3 to 5 months. That would be about a 5% gain in the American currency. And I throw that out there just for your raw commodity producers who need to know what the dollar's doing. It's going to go up, in my opinion, for the months ahead.
Beautiful, beautiful. Kerry, you've got short timelines on those moves to those upside targets in May corn and in May soybeans once we get to closes above the overhead resistance. Is that just because of the time of the year? Or is it just what the animal is? You bust that resistance, you make a quick move?
Yeah, well, I take into account the fact that we've had a kind of a vertical move until the last month or so. We've been congesting, really. And so I think it's kind of like the market's chomping at the bit to resume that vertical move. And so for me, it's above 579 even May corn. And then, I think the consolidation period is over and we should have an aggressive accelerated upside rally. I don't know if I answered your question properly or not there, Chip.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Thanks, Kerry. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Take care now.
That's Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Just go to artakadvisory.com to check out the video. It's 6-10-day forecast for March 14th through the 18th has got below normal temperatures expected over the most of the country. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Over most of the country. We've got below normal precipitation, North Dakota, South Dakota, Northern Nebraska, most of Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, but we've got above normal precipitation expected in southern Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, back into southern Kansas, Oklahoma, looking at some above normal precipitation as well. Real quickly on the 8 to 14 day, this is for March 16th through the 22nd, below normal temperatures across the entire belt and below normal precipitation in the western corn belt. Normal precip in the eastern corn belt. So some movement on the temperatures ahead.
Not quite
of
yet on the Speedo, Farmer Bob.
That's right. For Davis and producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Senator Roger Marshall from Kansas, right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.